WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
What did they say? What's the saying? A blind squirrel finds a blind horse.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Grit, compete, fourth line grit.
Your lives are so sad, I get a charity tax break just for hanging out with you.
On WGR.
You, Shorzy!
Sports Radio 550.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Hour 3. Getting underway here, Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. Headed over again to the Western Hotline as a buddy of mine, Chris Trapasso, joins us here now on the Western Hotline. Chris, thanks for joining me, man, and making some time as usual. I'm glad that you were able to lick your wounds after the golf round that I just stomped you in yesterday.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good getting you all the way up to Medina, being a Hamburg guy that you kind of spanned the entire size of Western New York, got to play my golf course. Now I got to come to your home course at some point now that we have some nice weather.
The weather is key there, man. And yeah, it was fun to get away from all the just stuff that's happening in the world. That's the great thing about sports, right, is they do kind of give us that escape, and golf is no different from that, my friend. I wanted to talk a little ball with you, and you know, obviously keeping everything else in mind and using it to you know, remind us of everything going on. I am interested in your thoughts about Drew Brees and the situation that played out this week with Drew. And, you know, I think a lot of now we're seeing, you know, Drew sort of be championed by a lot of his teammates that earlier in the week were kind of calling him out for some of the things that he said during an interview. You know, Drew's really at the end of his career, Chris. And, I mean, there's no denying that Drew is a Hall of Famer, arguably, you know, one of the best three or four quarterbacks of all time. Do you suspect that, like, what has happened over the last several weeks, or really actually this week, do you think that that maybe at all tarnishes his reputation as one of those players, one of those, like, you know, transcended quarterbacks of this generation? And if not, you know, what do you think he does from here to sort of repair some of the relationships that I think he's probably strained over the last few days?
Yeah, I'm not going to say that it's going to completely ruin his legacy, but I mean, you and I are talking about Drew Brees in a somewhat of a negative light based on his initial comments right now, when he had pretty much the cleanest slate that you can imagine for a legendary quarterback. I don't know how much it's going to tarnish his legacy, but there'll be a little asterisk that people our age and older will remember, and even the younger generation that still looks up to Drew Brees as this guy that has just been a passing yards and passing touchdowns machine for like 20 years now. I do think he's done a good job very quickly kind of trying to repair, and like he said in some of his social media, educate himself. And his initial comments, it's such a complex situation that it was easy to make a snap judgment one way or the other. At first, I didn't like what he said. Then I thought, hey, you know, he can have his opinion too, but this was 4 years since Colin Kaepernick knelt, and if he wasn't able to educate himself in the past 4 years, and then in the light of the George Floyd situation, for him to come out and say what he did initially, that was a head-scratcher to me. But he does seem to be moving in the right direction about educating himself and just being respectful that someone else could view the flag or view what it means to kneel during the national anthem from a different perspective. That's what I think we all have to, whatever side you're on, look at both sides of the situation. And the Black Lives Matter cause is more important than really a lot of other stuff in this country right now. And that's really what we all need to come around together and say, if we're not fully on board, educate ourselves on why this is such a strong cause for so many millions of people in this country.
And because of that, Chris, I don't have an opinion whether or not it's right or wrong. Let's put it this way, that the mm-hmm. Bills decided to stand behind Jake Fromm after his text messages were released this week. I found it doubly interesting to see former players like Lorenzo Alexander come out and say no. He shouldn't lose his job. The Bills should not cut Jake Fromm. And then you see people, you know, on Twitter today like Shaq Lawson, former Bills player, say he wouldn't want Jake Fromm mm-hmm. as a teammate. You know, how do you react to the Bills, their reaction to everything that has gone on this week? And do you think it's mostly – do you find it interesting that it's the Bills of all teams, maybe one of the strongest locker rooms in the league, that is able to handle something like this?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it's we've seen different reactions from different teams collectively because of the leaders in the locker room and just how tightly bonded some of these locker rooms are. And even with Lorenzo Alexander not being in that locker room anymore but still living in Buffalo, still having his finger on the pulse of the team, I think that helps. I think having Leslie Frazier, what he came out to say, leading the defense, I think that's his presence is so important on the team. So it's really a team-by-team basis, and I think everything that Sean McDermott has preached, Brandon Bean, there hasn't been any indication that there is any disconnect between players, coaches, offense, defense, players of different ethnicities, different upbringings in this Bills locker room. So I think that is probably why there wasn't an instant, you need to cut Jake Fromm and players coming out, and whether they were be voicing it through the media or through social media. That's probably why we didn't get that, because I think this Bills team, since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean arrived 2017-2018, they have not only gotten rid of the dead cap and signed and drafted a lot of good players, but truly the culture has gotten so much stronger, and we're seeing it really be put to the test here. So I think that's why Jake Fromm is still on the Bills and why they're looking to mend any disgruntled teammates, any relationships that he may have tarnished by what we saw in those text messages.
Chris Trapasso here on the Wester Hotline. So one of the things, too, with this Bills team that I do find interesting is, you know, their ability to take something like this on and grow from it, right? And we're talking about the strength of this locker room and maybe one of the stronger ones in the league. I also think continuity means something here. I think there's a level of trust that the players have in a Sean McDermott, in a Brandon Bean. I thought it was really telling a player like Josh Norman, who is, I don't want to call him like a loudmouth, but he's definitely a player that does not hold back punches. Like he's a guy that will tell it like it is, right? And his commentary about why he chose the Bills, about Brandon Bean, right, I definitely doesn't get lost on me that, you know, there are guys in this league who might not choose a team because they don't really particularly like the way that, you know, a general manager, a head coach might treat black players. I mean, we saw the foot and mouth situation we saw with Vic Fangio this week where he was kind of had to walk back some of his statements because it just didn't sound particularly empathetic, right? It was just kind of like, it just seemed like it was sort of an ignorant statement, and quite the opposite here in Buffalo. You haven't really heard too much outspoken word, but I think it's because there is such a level of, we need to worry about the trust that our players have in our organization. Of course, it's important for everybody else, but right now, the most important thing are the guys next to us. And like, so how much do you view the continuity playing a factor that these are players in this locker room that do trust and really believe that the head coach and the general manager are people there that are in their corners and not someone that you know, is going to go out and make an awful statement like Vic Fangio did this week?
Yeah, I think we're seeing really, it's not quantifiable, but why it seems like, I mean, we're up here in Buffalo, but that free agents, players getting drafted don't seem to be not wanting to come here anymore. And I think it's not because, I mean, players can live wherever they want in the offseason. It's not because of the weather. I think for the longest time, there was no continuity with GMs and head coaches. There was no real strong leadership for such a long time. And while I still think it's more important to get the right players in, get the right coaches in, we're seeing what's not quantifiable about the reputation and the respect that certain GMs and coaches have. And you're right that I think Vic Fangio, being an older head coach, it was really part of the old guard in the NFL that I'm sure the racism problem was worse 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when he was a defensive coordinator coming up as an assistant. I think the fact that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean are younger, not saying that every younger person is very progressive and every older person isn't, but the fact that they're younger, they're in their early 40s, they've kind of grown up with this and seen the Rooney Rule come into place and seen that there does need to be more diversity. I mean, with the Bills hiring female coaches, bringing in players last year. So I think that they're more understanding and aware that the NFL probably had a big issue with racism and some other discriminatory problems for a long time, and that they're against that and they want more diversity with females and treating the black players exactly the same as they treat the white players. So I think Brandon Bean him and Sean McDermott together in lockstep coming from Carolina on the same page is huge. We talked about it on the golf course yesterday. I don't know if a lot of players would want to go to the Washington Redskins. And Vic Fangio coming out and saying that as an older head coach, I think some Broncos players were probably pretty turned off by that, that an apology afterward was probably not really felt as strongly as his initial comment.
So, Chris, I mean, now I think what our job has to be to do is to kind of look forward. Like, the season is going to start here in 45 days. 50 days is when teams are going to start reporting to training camp. And it may seem like a long time, like just in terms of it's a high number, 50 days, oh, it seems like a long time away, but it's going to be here before we know it. And the question, you know, for me is, I don't think we're going to see any sort of radical change between now and the time the training camp starts open. So, you know, how does that affect the NFL? Like, what are we going to see come Sundays? You know, like, do you think that we're going to see more kneeling? Is that going to be the style or the method that you think players might use? Or is it just going to be, you know, this is something that the league is going to need to continue? We heard from Roger Goodell, which I thought was interesting. He didn't exactly say, hey, we messed up on the Colin Kaepernick thing, our bad, but he, you know, he's like sort of brushed over a little bit. But, you know, like, how does the league go about this as the season starts to approach? As there's not going to just be some, you know, solution in place by the time July 28th comes around.
Well, I think, first off, from a team perspective, we're going to see, really, once training camp, preseason, regular season starts, we are going to see kind of a dichotomy between the teams seemingly like the Bills, that the players and the coaches, there's a mutual respect, there's no thoughts of racism or that coach isn't behind me. And we're going to see some teams that are disconnected a little bit, that maybe Vic Fangio, I'm sure there's other coaches that are older, most likely are you know, along the same lines in his thinking. I mean, actually, against that point, Bruce Arians, who's one of the oldest head coaches in the league, has been very all about diversity for the NFL. We will see different teams have different responses, whether it be the entire team kneeling, whether it be locking arms during the national anthem. We'll see more demonstrations, which is great. And as for the NFL, I think your point is a really good one. It was shocking to see Roger Goodell come out with that video today and what he said, just based on what the NFL and the owners did to Colin Kaepernick. That at this point, Colin Kaepernick should certainly be on a team, and the NFL has been pretty much silent since he's been out of the league, or have said nothing positive. So I think the league, because they certainly need to have good PR at this point, coming off the coronavirus, and with all these demonstrations, so many players coming out on social media. I thought that video that Saquon Barkley tweeted out with all the superstars saying that they could be the next George Floyd, they could be any of these people that have died at the hands of police brutality, was so powerful. The league, I think, realizes now how serious this is. This is not one guy and his teammate Eric Reed kneeling. This is going to be at the forefront of every NFL game. So they need to step up with what they're doing to really help on such a huge platform to get this movement more in the forefront, because there's going to be more people watching the NFL than ever this season.
Chris Trapasso here on the Wester Hotline. Chris, let's talk about this season. Let's talk some football now. It is difficult to kind of put it to the everything else in the rear view, but there is a football season that's going to be played here shortly, and I am interested in overall, you know, the outlook for this Bills team, right? I really haven't been able to talk about it very much. Like, I think a lot of folks in this community are pretty excited about what this team is going to be, and you said something yesterday when we were playing golf that I thought was really interesting, that you thought this team could have potentially the same record they did last year, but be a significantly better team, and I think I'm kind of right there with you. It just based on 10 wins, probably wins you this division regardless. But more importantly, it's hard from year to year to really predict how difficult or easy a schedule will be, and I think that's no different this year. But I do find it interesting, and I think I agree with you, that if this is a team that with 10 wins, the same as it was last year, there's a good chance that they will be one of the better teams in the league at 10 wins.
Yeah, definitely. That don't just look at the wins at the end of the season. To face Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, a much-improved Dolphins team, Drew Locke, who has so many weapons around him, probably Ben Roethlisberger. The Bills certainly were a good team last year. They earned the playoff spot, the number 5 seed. but they faced some lower level quarterbacks. They're probably not going to have that luxury this year. And I think why winning 10 games, but still being one of the best teams in the AFC, if not the entire league, incredibly deep on the defensive line. I think this defensive line is what Sean McDermott has been building toward, what he had in Carolina. So deep along the defensive front, does not have to blitz a ton. The fact that A.J. Epenesa and Harrison Phillips, who really flashed in those first couple of games last year, are going to be second or third stringers technically when the season starts is a great sign. And like we talked yesterday on the course, bringing in Stephon Diggs to elevate this offense, maybe not to a level that is top 10 in the league, top 7, but just middle of the road. Stephon Diggs, so good in contested catch situations. If there are still some errant downfield throws from Josh Allen, you would think that Diggs can kind of mask some of those flaws. And I think, and maybe this is my bias because I love Devin Singletary coming out 2 years ago, I think he's in for a big season, that he really came on strong last year down the stretch. To have young, spry legs behind him in Zach Moss, completely different running style where defenses can't just zero in on one style, and having a full season as the starter, I think we're going to see just how elusive he is. Not going to necessarily have to touch the ball 25, 30 times, but another highly efficient season from him opens up the play-action game. I just think the Bills roster, not just top end like they were in 2014, but the depth on offense and defense is so good. Probably the best overall roster that I can remember in Buffalo.
All right, before I let you go, Chris, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is the Jets, because I just it's so easy to talk about them because there's weirdly interesting storylines, although I don't necessarily think that anything translates to success on the field. What are your outlook? Like, what is your outlook for this Jets team? Are you bullish? Like, are you feeling that maybe they're not being talked about enough? Or is this a team that you just think no matter what players they put out there, until they can figure out, you know, the right coach and the right coaching style and the right scheme, that it's not going to really matter how good Sam Darnold is right now because he's just not going to be maximized with the coaching staff in place?
Well, you and I kind of see a little differently on Sam Darnold. I'm not as high on him. I think he's been mostly the product of an insane redshirt freshman season at USC. And yes, there are crazy anticipation throws, and he's had a few really good games, but he's had like 20 or 25 really bad games or average games. So the quarterback position, I don't think, is set for them. And really, when you're looking at the two other teams in the division, I mean, obviously the Patriots are still there. Bill Belichick's defense is going to be good. I think the Dolphins are almost as scary, if not more scary, of competition for the Bills in the AFC East. We saw how hard that Dolphins team played for Brian Flores last year. They brought in a ton of free agents. They drafted Tua. They had 3 first-round picks. They drafted a ton of players. They have so much young talent that's going to be fighting for playing time. So I think the Dolphins, their leadership, I mean, Brian Flores compared to Adam Gase, I don't think is even close to any competition. And the Jets spent so much on the offensive line, but did they really bring in a star offensive lineman? They brought in a lot of guys that were decent backups or bottom of the roster players. They added offensive linemen, but they didn't bring in a Quentin Spain, who was a 4-year starter. They didn't bring in a Mitch Morse type, who was one of the best centers in the league. I think they have a ways to go. I like Denzel Mims in the second round, but is their receiver group really that scary with him and Jamison Crowder? And then on defense, Greg Williams, I just he never has really done it for me. Jamal Adams is great, but he might want out. They might have to trade him instead of extending him. They really have no pass rush to speak of. I think we kind of said this again on the golf course yesterday. I think the Dolphins are actually going to be a tougher game for the Patriots and the Bills in the AFC East. I don't buy any of the hype that the Jets are there to win the division this season. I don't really love Darnold, and I don't really think their team has a ton of superstars or a lot of depth.
All right, my man. I appreciate you making some time talking ball, talking life, talking everything going on in the community. We appreciate your thoughts, your wisdom, your nuance, as usual, my friend. So thank you for making the time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and looking forward to getting back on the links with you soon.
All right, Nate. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, brother. Chris Trapasso there, CBS Sports, on the West Her Hotline. So before I wrap things up, obviously we will hear from Darren Dreger, who Derek, it looks like you've got commentary here. Give it to me.
Darren Dreger talking about phase two for the NHL's return to play format. A couple of interesting questions there as well. I'm intrigued to see how that happens, actually.
I am interested in the NBA's kind of figured out their model. The NHL seems like they also have, but
it's a slower play.
Yeah.
And the Penguins confirming that there's a case of coronavirus on the roster.
Yeah.
So it's always going to pop into my mind, like, you're going to have these long playoff stretches for these two leagues. What happens when a player gets got?
Yeah.
So, like, what if, say, for example, the Penguins, what if that player is Evgeny Malkin? What if that player is Sidney Crosby? How much of a problem do you have with that team? And then as you look into the offseason for that team, you go, man, what could have been? If Sidney Crosby didn't come down with the coronavirus, we might have actually had a legitimately shot. But it's just like, I don't know if they're going to just treat it as a normal injury and then you just keep going or just...
How it plays out is going to be really interesting.
Because good luck containing it if a player does happen to get it.
That's right. And if that happens, what do you do? Do you scale back? Do you stop the tournament? Like, that's the thing is once you open Pandora's box here and you say you're playing games, you can't. I don't think you can just stop. Like, you can't play five games and say two teams have outbreaks of multiple players and say everyone's got to stop playing. Like, that's not really realistic.
And if you're a fan of that team and you've got a team that just straight up gets an outbreak and you're a fan of that team, and you just go, come on. Like, look at the Boston Bruins. Best team in hockey this year. If they, for example, were to get an outbreak, you're cutting down one of the most promising teams for the Stanley Cup this year. Regardless of what kind of tournament it is, the Bruins should be a favorite. What happens then? You know, Boston fans, yes, they have plenty of championships and trophies, so I'm not necessarily envious. Like, I'm not going to be, like, really sympathetic to the whining about not winning a championship, but at the same time, it's going to be legitimately questioned, though. Like,
I would have, by the way, I just want to point out, I would have taken a questioned championship. I would have taken a parade down Main Street.
I would have taken a playoff series a five-game series.
I would have taken one game of a win. Just one win. One playoff win.
Like, a five-game series, a team could just have a hot goaltender and it's that. Done. But now it's just like Columbus is very interesting.
Yes.
The Columbus-Toronto matchup, I'm very intrigued by, because Columbus is going to get healthy. In normal standards, they would not have been.
Right.
So
it's a great way to think about it, too.
Yeah, there's
a lot of things at play. A lot of things at play. Darren Dreger coming up next here. We'll replay that for you here shortly. And then, we'll go from there. Darren Dreger coming up next here on WGR.
WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Nate Geary, Derek Kramer here with you. Playing back for you, Darren Dreger, who was on with the guys earlier this week.
Darren Dreger, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
TSN Hockey Insider joins us every Friday at 11:30. Love wrapping the week up with you. Before we get to all the phase two stuff, play downs, all that, we call play, I don't know what we call it, 24, whatever we want to call it, play in. Before we get to all that, Dregs, is there ever a chance you could see Nashville part ways with Ryan Johansson?
Yes, I do. I do. The Nashville Predators are a team that, they're up against it too from a salary aspect. And, the Kyle Turris rumors have been out there forever. And Ryan Johansson, for the most part, has underachieved there. So I think it would have to be a decent hockey deal, quote unquote, as we always like to describe, even though isn't every deal pretty much a hockey deal when you're trading picks or prospects or whatever. But just based on salary alone, I could see that possibility for sure.
Well, he was part of one of the, what I would say, that was a great one-for-one deal. It was need for need.
Yeah, and Seth Jones has just been terrific when healthy for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, Ryan Johansson has the capability of being a good hockey player, an impactful hockey player, potentially a game-changing player. I don't know if they've just, there's not enough puck for all of their top-end forwards there,
all the guys that they've paid big money for, including Matt Duchene. But, you know, I maybe a fresh start would also kind of jolt Ryan Johansson. But it, as we look back now, I don't think that there's any question that the Columbus Blue Jackets won that trade based on how well Seth Jones has developed as a top-end NHL defenseman.
Well, there you go. There's our guy.
Well, you know what? It's very interesting. We need that second line center, and Ryan Johansson is he's still only 27 years old, but yeah. You know, the youngest forward on Nashville right now is Philip Forsberg at 25 years old. They have no young buck coming up in the system there. So, I mean, listen, we've got some prospects that might be available, you know, and Ryan Johansson is, I think, a real nice second-line center. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly could be, and he could be a fit in Buffalo. It'd be interesting to learn whether Jason Botterill has explored that or if he will. And not to go back to Jack Eichel's comments, because, I mean, we basically put those to bed, but all, including Jason Botterill and ownership in Buffalo, can appreciate, you know, how frustrated Jack Eichel is, because that frustration is shared by everyone. But, you know, Botterill is the guy that has to find a way to execute change and make the team better. He's willing to do that. He's embracing that responsibility. So a scenario like that absolutely might be something he would consider.
Darren Dreger joining us here on the line. I don't want to you know, take all your time up with, you know, fantasy lunchtime, lunchbox, trade stuff. But I appreciate you backing me, boys, on the Ryan Johansson riff. He's not Swedish. It's not Johansson. It's Johansson. Dregs, I don't even know where to begin with the NHL stuff, you know, because, you know, when do you expect a timeline on phase 3-4? When, like, do we realistically expect players to report for phase 2? You know, where are we with the CBA? Like, where are we with everything?
Yeah.
There's just so much going on, and it's just been thrown at us day by day. It's just hard to keep track.
Well, I can tell you, Petey, what I'm encouraged by is the target timelines that the National Hockey League appears to be continuing to hit here. You know, a couple of weeks ago, they openly talked about how they plan on initiating phase 2 in early June. Well, it's early June, and it was announced yesterday that they're initiating phase 2. Great. Now, it's voluntary, so players don't have to come back to their club cities. You know, the NHL would prefer that. And, you know, depending on where you are geographically with COVID-19 and whatnot, it looks like the large majority of NHL clubs, are going to be able to open up in small groups and use their facilities and train and all of those things. So the timing of this is encouraging for me, because if they're on the money with the initiation of phase 2, then training camps likely will open around July 10th or the middle of July. So again, another calendar target that likely is going to get hit. And then phase 4, which is game on, will very likely get going around to the beginning of August. So for me, all of that stuff, unless there's some form of setback specific to the coronavirus, is all encouraging.
When you say game on, be more specific. Mm-hmm. Puck drop or training camp drop?
No, puck drop. Training camp opening, the plan is to get that going in mid-July. You know, is that a little bit optimistic? I would have thought so until last night, until the NHL initiated phase 2, because, you know, I wasn't certain that they were going to get the medical, the health clearance that they ended up getting to initiate phase 2. So now that, again, phase 2 is open season in terms of allowing the players to come back and train in small groups and all that, again, unless there's something that changes their path, then training camps should open somewhere around the middle of July.
So, and phase 3, Dregs, again, is what, sorry?
Well, effectively, it's training camps and, you know, potentially getting to your hub cities, right? And they haven't identified the hub cities yet, the two hub cities, and it sounds like they're
they're probably a week away from carving back the lengthy list. There's still 8 to 10 cities that are on that list, and then probably 2 weeks from declaring the two hub cities. So phase three is about the hub cities and training camp, and phase four is puck drop. That's the qualifying round starts and the round robin starts.
Dregs, there aren't many people in the hockey world that know as much as you do. And I say that in all seriousness. So you can tell us, who was the Pittsburgh player that tested positive?
I don't know. I mean, the good news, as soon as I read he's recovered and he's fine, I mean, I lost some interest in it, to be fair. But there was some interesting wording used in that statement from the Pittsburgh Penguins, and ultimately from the NHL, describing how anyone who had come in close contact with this player has been notified of his positive test. But, I mean, I poked around a little bit just out of my own curiosity, but no one disclosed the name, and the guys that I talked to, mostly player agents, didn't know. So if I knew, I still wouldn't tell you, because for me that's a highly personal thing. If the player wants to come out and disclose, as you know, some of the Ottawa Senators did early in the process, I've got no problem with that. But I'm not digging into players.
Oh yeah, listen, if you don't want to hear, if you don't want us to hear you tap dancing, don't wear the shoes.
Back in your day, okay, Petey, would you want me to dig around in your personal stuff?
Well, I mean, I had a 24-hour flu a couple weeks ago. If you want to tweet that out, that'd be great. You know, but other than that, there's not much going on. There's nothing interesting in my life, Drex.
No. I'm going back in the day. I'm going back in your heyday when you were trolling and you were doing all the stuff that you used to. Now you're a clean living human being. You're an upstanding citizen. But it hasn't always been that way for Andrew Peters.
Listen, I don't think anyone would have been surprised if you tweeted out that I was breaking curfew, Dregs. I was never in the lineup anyway. I was a traveling fan. Instigator, yeah. Darren Dreger joining us. TSN Hockey Insider. He's at Darren Dreger on Twitter. We're just kind of recapping everything from the league. Let me ask you this, Dregs. I feel like we may have had this conversation with you. Do you think, you know, a lot of this time to put together these ideas, leak ideas, has been a good idea or a good opportunity for the NHL to maybe see what kind of popular changes they could make going forward? Like, for instance, a 2014 playoff or adding more teams to a playoff?
I do. And, you know, let's see how successful it is first. You know, see how much excitement there is. I think the excitement's going to be obvious just with the return of hockey, period. But let's first experience it. But I don't know if it's Carlo Kuliakovo. Somebody suggested recently the notion of a play-in for the third wildcard spot in each conference. So you play your 82-game regular season, and you've got your two wild cards, which are playoff locks, but you have a play-in series for that third wildcard spot, or second wildcard spot, sorry. So it's not a bad idea. It's an interesting one. And I think that the league would consider an idea like that. But Bettman has gone on record multiple times saying that this is a one-off with the 24 team field. And, you know, don't forget, even though there are 24 teams, you know, effectively it's still a 16 team postseason, four rounds of seven game series. So the integrity of the Stanley Cup through the eyes of the National Hockey League is still being observed. So I think anything is possible, but I think anything beyond this year as dramatic as a 2014 field is unlikely.
More from TSN's Darren Dreger after a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. More from Darren Dreger.
If I'm not mistaken, I do recall, I think years ago, Vegas wasn't a favorable idea either for an expansion team. Right. And look how that's worked. I think Vegas was kind of poo-pooed a little bit by the league years and years ago. Like, Vegas came up 10, 15 years ago.
For sure. And historically, it's always been does the National Hockey League want to be involved in the world of gambling and all the seediness that goes around with that? Then they realized in the last number of years that, hey, there's a boatload of money that can be made through legalized gambling. So let's not miss an opportunity and miss the boat on this. And it was important for the NHL to, you know, be the first pro team, major sports team to get into that market, to get into Vegas. And Vegas has been a wild success for sure.
Yeah, so which leads me to basically my point is that doesn't mean he's closed-minded to the idea. No. But, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest with you. I've only ever known the NHL for 16 teams. So
yeah.
I was in the American League when we experimented with 7, 10, 8, 9. You know, gave us a little bit more of a lifeline. But, you know, I don't really think it impacts – revenues in the American League. I think that's more done for like as a tester, but it was interesting. It gave you a few more games, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, well, again, I, you know, this is an experiment through necessity. And look, I think there'd be many general managers open to it because, you know, if more teams qualify for the playoffs, then more coaches keep their jobs and more general managers keep their jobs. But you look around the cast of owners inside that boardroom, man, there's some old crotchety dudes in there who don't like change. There really is. So, I mean, you never say never because, you know, if Bettman and company and the 31 owners, 32, if you include Seattle, as we should, I guess, you know, they've got to be thinking outside the box because there's been nothing normal of this experience. So if you're not thinking the way that you are, Petey, then you're probably not doing your job. I mean, you need to be able to consider outside revenue streams, et cetera.
How are you thinking in terms of the voting? How has your voting changed based on this year? I know you got to get your votes in for the awards, right?
Yeah. I mean, they still haven't fully hammered out a timeline as to when, you know, whether it's part of the playoffs where you know, maybe announce one major award winner per week or per series, something along those lines. You know, they're still going through that. In fairness, I spend a lot of time researching, and I hope that most of the voters do. You know, when you see that the votes are publicized, as they have been the last few years, you look at it and you go, I don't think that individual paid much attention this year. But I go through a fairly extensive process over the course of the year, because you can get caught up in a defenseman or a forward, whatever, you know, having a real good second half, and then you're like, ooh, well, he deserves, you know, the top ballot. Well, you have to balance, especially for the Norris, for me anyway. I break it down in quarters. I analyze the first quarter of the regular season, the second, the third, and then the final stretch of the regular season. So, I mean, some of the names are obvious. If you look at the Norris, you're talking about Yossi, you're talking about Carlson, you're talking about Victor Hedman, you're talking about Alex Petrangelo, like those sorts of names. But I'm going to dive hard into that, I would say, in the next couple, 3 weeks.
Before you go, last thing, who's your coach of the year?
Well, that's a tough one. Alain Vigneault makes a lot of sense for me. You know, he's done great things with that Philadelphia Flyers team, and I like Alain. He's a good man. You know, John Tortorella had a good year with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh, you know, has done great work. Bruce Cassidy with the Boston Bruins. So I'm kind of going all over the map here. So pushed, I'd probably look at Vigneault in Philadelphia.
Well, Rib doesn't get a vote, but I'm certain it would be for Vigneault as well. He's one of his favorite coaches. Drags, thank you so much for your time today, and look forward to next week, my friend.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
That was TSN's Darren Dreger. Thanks, and a big thanks to my guests who joined me today throughout the show. Sal Capaccio, Thor Nystrom from NBC and Roto World, Sloan Martin from WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, and of course, Chris Trapasso with CBS Sports. Thanks to all of them. And more importantly, thanks to everyone listening today. This was a difficult, you know, moment for me. I was kind of avoiding this situation, and I feel better for having been able to speak with everybody and and sort of get my thoughts, my message out there for everyone to hear. So thank you for listening. Thank you for accepting. And thank you for everything that the people in this community are doing to make it a better place. So for me, Nate Geary, Derek Kramer, another edition of Sports Talk Saturday coming your way next week, 7 days from now on WGR.